You're listening to KEDM Public Radio. I'm Jason Reinhart, joined in the studio with Dr. Scott Humes, who is an associate professor within the Visual and Performing Arts and the Department of Music here at ULM. And he's going to be presenting a concert tomorrow evening, February 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in the Emmy Lou Biedenhorn Recital Hall. The concert is free and open to the public. And he'll be joined by some guests from out of town performing music of Bartok and Messiaen. Well, Scott, let's talk about this Messiaen piece, because I know as a music major growing up, I knew about the piece and I had heard recordings of it. But like I told you, I've never actually experienced it live. And it's somewhat of a special piece to listen to live.
Absolutely. I think we can all agree that there's a completely different way of receiving a piece in a live performance than there is through any recordings, no matter how good a recording might be.
And this piece is special to Messiaen and musicians alike. And can you kind of tell us and walk us through what's going on with Messiaen when he's writing this and what has happened to him?
Okay. It's quite a long and involved story, so I'll pare it down as much as possible. But with the outbreak of World War II at the end of the 1930s, even musicians, classical musicians, were joining the military in the effort. And so this is how the musicians that would come to premiere the quartet ended up in the same prisoner of war camp. I always like to emphasize that it wasn't a concentration camp, that it was just for prisoners of war. So the musicians themselves benefited a little bit, Messiaen especially, because one of the guards at Stalag 8, where he was imprisoned, recognized him as a composer. This guard happened to be a classical music fan and was aware of Messiaen and his works already. Mm-hmm. So he was afforded special treatment. They gave him a special place where he could compose, brought him sheet music and pencils so that he could write while he was still a prisoner. Then he would come to meet the violinist, cellist, and clarinetist in that same camp to work and premiere the work. With the 70th anniversary of the end of the war this year, it's just an amazing time, I think, to kind of see probably the quintessential musical work from the era, and then understand a little bit about, even though the piece utilizes verses from the Book of Revelation, it's not based upon that. Those were simply influences that Messiaen, in his devout Catholic faith, used as kind of undertones of the piece. It helps steer the piece, and it's kind of an emotional look into the psyche and the experiences of those prisoners in the camp. So it was interesting. There's a lot of rumors flying around, and what it amounts to is Messiaen was a sensationalist and actually started most of those inadequate, not quite so truthful tales about the actual conditions of the instruments that were used, etc. But it makes for a colorful story, and that's how we've known it all along. So the work is just monumental and was attended at the premiere performance by fellow prisoners of the camp, who most of which had absolutely no experience or exposure to classical music. And in reading the history of this premiere performance was riveting for me, that all of the interviewed people just felt that they could understand it, even though they might not have had any training or exposure to classical music. It just made sense to them.
Right.
So it's a very heavy piece, but at the same time, beautiful, just fantastically beautiful with lots of colors.
And what Messiaen does in this piece is take the eight movements, and most of the instruments that are in the quartet get a solo a rendering or a movement of their own to kind of feature themselves. You talked about the last movement with the string.
Yes.
And why is that movement so special to you?
It stands apart from the others. There's the solo cello movement. Now, let me kind of back up just a little bit. The clarinet has a solo movement that is clarinet alone, which is quite unusual when you're writing a quartet to have a movement that uses only one of the players. But the cello and the violin solo movements include the piano. And the cello movement's lush and beautiful. But the end is where the violin and piano really take over, and it symbolizes the move towards that divine paradise at the end of time. But the time is not portrayed as what we know it, you know, the the watch ticking away. That's not really what time is representing here. It's more ethereal than that. And just having made the journey through the first seven movements and knowing the premise of each of those movements and a suggested meaning for each of them, I think the violin just wraps it up most eloquently at the end. And for me, this is an extremely emotional piece. And I have to hold it together on stage and at the same time, but still allow it to permeate. So,
because you are in a live performance, and you know, the reason we perform music is because it moves us.
Absolutely, and we try to convey that in our performance to the audience as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Dr. Scott Humes is here with me in the studio, and we're talking about this concert. And Scott, you have some friends coming in from out of town to perform this work and the Bartok with you. How do you know these people, or how did you get connected with them?
Well, I went to school with two of them, the violinist and the pianist. The violinist, Jubal Falks, is faculty at the University of Northern Colorado. And then the pianist is on the faculty at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. Okay. The cellist is a colleague of the pianist at Luther College as well. And I'm not familiar with him. It'll be our first chance to meet. But a couple years ago, the violinist, Jubal, sent me a message, and I felt so honored. He said, "When do I get to play again with Scott Humes?"
Ah.
And so I jumped on that opportunity immediately, and it's taken us a little while to put this together, but it's so exciting now.
And while they're in town, they are going to give a master class. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. Jubal is going to give a violin master class at the same time the cello master class is going to happen. At the ULM campus for violin and cello, and that's going to be 4 p.m. The violins are going to meet in the Emmylou Biedenharn Recital Hall, and the cellists are going to meet in the room 134 in the music building for these master classes.
All right, and that's Biedenharn Hall for everybody that's not familiar with our campus. And Scott, there's a lot of work that goes into this concert, and I hope that you guys aren't just playing it once here.
No, absolutely. We were going to have a big tour. it turned into being able to time-wise schedule it here, which I understand is the first time, if or potentially the very first time, the Messiaen has ever been performed in Monroe and the Monroe area. And then we're traveling the Wednesday to Iowa, where we're going to perform it on Thursday evening at Luther College.
Okay, excellent. Well, Scott Humes, I appreciate you coming in and talking to me this. Good luck on your concert tomorrow evening, and I
Thank
can't
you.
Wait to hear it.
Yeah, me too.